Welcome to The Brainstorm, a podcast and video series from ARK Invest. Tune in every week as we react to the latest in innovation and reflect on how short-term news impacts our long-term views. To learn more, visit ARK-invest.com.
ARK Investment Management, LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other, and therefore ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 68 of The Brainstorm. We have Kathy Wood on today, and we're going to be talking politics and tech. And Kathy, I know you just did a video that people can watch, but maybe just to start off, Trump, Elon, there's so much that can happen, so many things that get talked about on the campaign trail. What do you think can actually happen? Can there be this massive reform across every industry, right? In Brainstorm, we were talking about crypto, we're talking about defense, M&A, healthcare, FDA. Can it all be done, or where do you think the early moves are made that have the biggest impact?
Well, can it all be done over a four-year time span? I think, given especially Trump's experience in the administration, the first one, and just learning the ropes, I think it's a good setup. The other good setup here is, and I'm going to compare this to a time very early in my career, the Reagan presidency. Reagan came in, it was a very similar setup. The deficit was screaming, although it was only 5.5% at its worst then. I think we're at 6.5% right now. The U.S. was, at that time, not very well respected in the world. And, I think there was some of that. Regulation was a big, big problem, very big. And sort of the animal spirits back then just weren't there. And you have a little bit of a replay this time around. But what Trump will not have to face is what Reagan faced in the first 2 years of his administration, back-to-back recessions. And that's because we've been through a rolling recession, I think, since the Fed started raising rates in 22, hitting one sector, housing, autos, commercial real estate, capital spending now. So I feel like we've been through a recession of sorts. He's not going to have to do that unless they delay some of these tax cuts and make promises that people will wait around and say, okay, I'll wait. And so that could be a problem. In fact, it was a big problem for Reagan. He phased in his tax cuts over 3 years. So guess what? We had a recession until about 6 months a bear market until about 6 months before the last tax rate cut took place. So I think it's very important that they get things done fast so people don't wait around saying, I'm going to wait for a better deal in the future. And then I think he can do a lot. He's not going to have to deal with a recession. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited. I'm sorry, keep going, don't I?
It's all good. Yeah. And so then, if we've been through the rolling recession, you know, as that was going on, the indexes were screaming, right? Largely driven by Mag 7. Perhaps less fear of the consumer being weak or companies being taxed or burdened by regulation. So how do you think about these big companies getting bigger versus the innovation that's not in the indices as all of these things are repealed?
Yeah, you said Mag 7. Of course, I've referred to them as Mag 6 because, you know, they threw out Tesla when it started underperforming. So Mag 6.
I think they're going to want Tesla back in.
They're going to want Tesla back in. They're going to include a few more, too. I think that if you look at the Small Business Optimism Index, it dropped. It is down near where it was near the lows of 08-09. So this environment over the last 4 years has been very difficult for small businesses. And small businesses employ 80%. Some people say 60%, but I'm hearing more and more 80%, which is the number I remember. And so between regulation, the inability to get credit, the inability for venture capital and others who are betting on these innovators to get liquidity events in the form of M&A, because the FTC was saying no to almost every acquisition, no matter whether it was in the same industry or not. So I think that is all going to accrue to the benefit of small businesses. The animal spirits are back. And the Mag 6 move was all about cash and safety. And oh, by the way, yes, they'll benefit perhaps from AI. And I know there are debates on that, sustained innovation, disruptive innovation. Nick and Brett and you have had this debate on the brainstorm. But I really do believe that the Mag 6, to the extent they are going to benefit from AI and all of the new technologies that we think are going to be turbocharged during these next 5 years, there are going to be smaller businesses that are going to benefit much more from an appreciation potential point of view. They've been so beaten down, right? And I think chief among them is healthcare and how the dynamic is going to shift from big pharma, which also had way outperformed the smaller names. I think big pharma is going to find the world ahead a bit hostile relative to its model, and it will seek to infuse some innovation into its veins with some of these multiomics names that we've been spending a lot of time with over the last 10 years.
Kathy, what about the crypto space? You talked about the move in the Mag 6 being more risk off because, you know, investors were seeking safety and the cash balances there. But now you have crypto. It's made a very strong move after the election. Bitcoin, I think as an hour ago, was 85. So how do you think about how the crypto space will shape up given the administration's favorable attitude towards it?
Well, Bitcoin has been outperforming most of the longer tail assets within crypto. As we were moving towards the election, it was becoming so clear that crypto is a bipartisan issue, especially young people. And so both parties were catering to it. But I think that Trump made clear what he thought. I think we're going to see a lot of legislative moves that will legitimize crypto in the eyes of people who are just going to stay away from it until until we had our regulatory act together. So from a regulatory point of view, I think Gary Gensler will be out of business. And we know from the research team at the SEC and others that there was much more support for crypto inside the SEC, certainly Bitcoin, but, you know, crypto a little bit more broadly, just a more of an open mind, I would say, than many people appreciate. So, and then on the legislative side with Senator Lummis and Senator Gillibrand, I think we're going to see legislation that is going to be very crypto-friendly because the U.S. wants to lead in these three revolutions, the money revolution, which is primarily Bitcoin, global rules-based monetary system, the DeFi, the financial services revolution, DeFi, decentralized finance, or I'm hearing it called the Finternet. I learned that from an Indian person in India. They're calling it the Finternet, which, think about it, that actually rings true. This is, you know, the layer of the internet that no one built in, the developers did not build in, because we didn't know about financial services and commerce in the early 80s being a thing online. It just didn't occur to anyone. And then the third revolution is Web3, or, you know, the digital property rights revolution. And that's going to be huge. And so I think this administration is going to be very friendly. After all, Trump loves the idea, and Melania as well, of these crypto assets, you know, or Web3 assets with his face on them. And so I think it's going to be fun. I think, you know, the U.S. really spawned the internet revolution, and I think we'll carry on now.
Kathy, staying in the currency space, you've talked to us in the econ meeting and then just generally about the dollar and the potential strength and or weakness given Trump's view on tariffs and what we're talking about. Cryptocurrency obviously plays a role in that as well with the adoption of stablecoins. So curious your thoughts just on what you think will happen to the dollar, how it will either strengthen or weaken now.
Yes, well, it's interesting. I think many people are looking at tariffs and saying, this is terrible. I don't like tariffs myself. I don't like any tax increase. And that's a tax increase, or it's a tax on consumption. But what I think he's trying to communicate is, you know, he's got a negotiating tool with other countries to level the playing field and allow some of our, especially our innovators, into those countries with IP rights, guaranteeing IP, intellectual property rights. So it's a little bit of a bargaining tool. But I would also say that the more I learn from people in and around the administration or this future administration, that the way they're looking at taxation is a little bit more like in the early days of this country. President George Washington, the first tax ever introduced into the U.S. was tariffs. You know, that there was no income tax. There wasn't an income tax. And I actually think that that President Trump will want to move us a little bit more towards that way of thinking about the world. And, you know, Art Laffer, I know, speaks to President Trump, has spoken to most presidents since, I think, President Nixon, actually, and consulted. He was not employed. He was employed by President Nixon and then decided he would never be employed by the government again, but wanted to give his advice. His advice is to, you know, flatten out the tax rate and reduce it. And if the trade-off is tariffs, as long as they're not, I think we have to treat our free trading partners maybe a little differently than those who are not allowing a level playing field. But I like this trade-off. You also asked, and I know I just went on a tangent there, Nick. So that's the tax side of things, but you were coming from the dollar.
Yeah.
So what's going to drive the dollar? Returns on invested capital here, U.S., relative to the rest of the world. The policies, tax cuts, deregulation, keeping inflation down, and we can get into that in a moment. All of these are dollar friendly because returns on invested capital here in the United States, all other things equal, will go up relative to returns in the rest of the world. This is what happened during the Reagan administration. In fact, it happened. It was so extreme in the Reagan administration that it caused major problems in the rest of the world. Especially they had inflation. We enjoyed lower inflation with the dollar going up, especially commodities are priced in dollars. So commodity prices to us went down. Commodity prices to other countries went up. And it was a very difficult time, so much so that in 1985, I believe it was, there was the Plaza and there were two accords, the Plaza and the Louvre Accords, both of which encouraged Treasury leaders from around the world to come together and agree to get the dollar down, including ours. What did that mean? It meant that we had to ease more. We had to ease all other things equal. That's also very positive. So I think the thing that's going to keep inflation down even more, and this will be true in every country to the extent they adopt these new technologies, especially AI, is the massive productivity gain we're going to see. It's going to drive higher growth and lower inflation. And I think the U.S. being freed up, especially from regulation, which has been strangling us, is going to be a huge beneficiary relative to what otherwise would have been the case. That's also dollar positive.
All right. So then last tangential question here, and then we can wrap it. I think this has been a great summary of everything we've been brainstorming about. Is there's an article today in the Wall Street Journal, Berkshire Hathaway's cash pile, biggest ever. People say, you know, Buffett is doing this. He's done it ahead of previous crashes. What's your take? I know you just said you think we're through the rolling recessions that have already happened. Do you think he's looking at something different, or what's your read?
He's probably looking at how much the market concentrated towards just a few stocks. And historically, when that happens, either we go into a bear market like 1973 through 75, and then again the tech and telecom bubble, so 2000 to 2003. My guess is that because he's looking at Apple, which was one of his biggest holdings, and he was looking at its valuation relative to history, and it's so far above anything we ever saw, even after the smartphone was launched and Apple just took over what was rightly Motorola's, Ericsson's, Nokia's, even BlackBerry's bread and butter. Its multiple is much higher than it was back then. And he's probably saying, okay, wait a minute, their revenue growth has been slowing down. There's no new smartphone moment here. And maybe he doesn't believe that AI is going to make that much of a difference. So I would say he's looking at concentration in the market, saying this is a harbinger of a bear market. If you look at history, though, more times than not, those are the two times where it led to a bad, significant bear market. The other times, starting in 1932, I think it was 32 and 64 and 09, and there was one other one. if you look at what happened after those concentrated periods, we moved into a bull market that broadened out. So that's our bet. Mm-hmm. That's our bet. I think many, many other investors looked at that concentration and said, this is just a bad sign. And the multiples of those stocks are at such a point where I'm going to, you know, call it a day for right now. So, you know, this is what makes a market. And we've been pounding the table on three things that would help our kind of strategy, which we were just talking about it earlier today. Many people are calling, innovation-based strategies a new asset class. And I find that so unbelievable because we're talking about the equity market and it is not a new asset class. But I think that the surprise here is going to be that these smaller companies are now going to be given some running room. And this is the broadening of the market. And I think we're going to see, you know, incredible creativity, entrepreneurial spirit, animal spirits coming back. And those stocks have been neglected. Really, they've been neglected. If you look at our strategies for certainly the last 4 years, in total, of course, we've seen light at the end of the tunnel from our AI and next generation internet strategies. But the earliest stage, the multi-omics, genomic revolution strategies have been quite disadvantaged. And I think they have a lot of catching up to do.
Amazing. Kathy, we don't get Kathy on every week, so I'm going to ask one last question, which is, you know, one aspect of all of this which we haven't talked about yet is the Fed has started cutting rates. How do you think that factors into the new administration's way of thinking? You mentioned inflation before. Maybe you can touch on that, because in seeing rates come down, yields on some of the longer duration bonds, the 10-year specifically, have remained elevated despite the rate cutting. So curious your thoughts there. Last question.
Sure. President Trump says he wants interest rates down. And I think he's thinking especially about mortgages, because housing affordability has just crashed in this cycle. If we're right and the economy starts growing at an accelerated rate, which is what the long bond yield, if you look at the breakdown between inflation and real yields in the long bond, you can use tips to do that. More of the move recently has come from real rates. Some has come from inflation. Now, one of the mistakes I think people make is something called the Phillips curve. They assume that when employment is strong or the unemployment rate goes down, that inflation goes up. And if you look at the 80s and 90s, and I think we're going into that kind of environment again, you'll see that as real growth accelerated, inflation came down. Why? Productivity. You get good unit growth, you get the productivity coming down. Now, the reason people don't think we'll see a repeat of the 80s and 90s is we started at a 15% inflation back then. And here we're at 2.5% inflation, roughly, depending on the measure. And they're saying, well, what does that mean, productivity and inflation coming down? I think some pricing's going to actually go negative because technology is inherently deflationary, but this is good deflation. Your consumer electronics product prices come down over time, or they increase the quality. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And I think that's going to be one of the biggest surprises. Much lower than expected inflation, interest rates, as a result, lower than expected, even in a rapid growth environment. And I can just give you, sum it up by saying this. We have lived in roughly a 5% nominal GDP environment, say 2% real and 3% inflation. Can you imagine, if we're right, an economy where maybe we're growing 4% real and inflation is 1%, still the same nominal, but we think that could happen. And part of that could happen because some pricing, because technology's permeating every sector, blurring the lines between and among sectors, this deflationary influence, AI training costs dropping 75% a year, AI inference costs dropping 85-90% per year. That's going to permeate every sector. So I think this is going to be a golden moment for equities. I think it's going to be better than the 80s and 90s.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
All right, Kathy, thank you so much for joining us. We'll see everyone next week.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, everyone.